From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made at about 9 o'clock this morning. After years of discussion, the city of Rochester began filling the inner loop. Senator Chuck Schumer helped lead the ceremony and compared it to the falling of the Berlin Wall. Hyperbole? Well, sure. But Schumer says it's the kind of project that will reshape Rochester for the better. So we're wondering, what is the kind of change that could transform the town you live in, or the city of Rochester? Across the region, there are efforts to reshape, redesign, rebuild. And in 2 weeks, the Community Design Center Rochester will host their fourth annual Reshaping Rochester Awards with 16 finalists. And we're going to be talking about some of them and how they could impact all of us this hour. My guest for the hour, Johnny Monroe, the Executive Director of the Community Design Center Rochester. Nice to have you.
Nice to be here, Evan. Thank you.
And Roger Brown is a board member and creative consultant. Roger, welcome back. Thanks
Great.
For being here.
Thank you very much.
Did you guys take the inner loop in?
No, we talked about it.
You talked about it. Before we even get to all the reshaping, I'm curious, because that's such a big issue in this city. What do you think, Roger?
It's a great project. It really is. And, this thing started really in earnest being thought about in the 1990 with Vision 2000. And from that point on, it's just been a matter of trying to figure out how to make it happen, where the money comes from. And to what, in fact, can be developed with the land that's going to be created, from that. And that's a process right now the city is still, working on. And actually, we may have a small part in helping in that process.
Yeah, so. I'm curious. A couple points there. If there's criticism at all, and again, I know some people have complained because they use the inner loop and it's convenient for them, and I've joked on this program that I love it because I'm always on it. No one else is. But should the city have started this project without a full plan of what exactly is going to be on that space?
Oh, we often argue that, they should have. But there's been so much done on this piece over the years. And the concept for it has been pretty much established, and that actually from day one in 1990, this it's sort of very much being, developed the way it was thought to be. I think that the two ends where it hits Monroe Avenue, where it hits the Main Street area, there are things that everybody, the center and even people from the city wish that maybe that was a little bit different. But the state has had a lot of say in this thing. So, however, nonetheless, in between all of that, I think a lot of good things can happen. And I think eventually it'll all shake out in a very positive form.
You're not worried about what happens with that space?
No, I'm not. I'm not. It's always something that we hope that there will be input from our local community to this. I do know that there are design firms right now that are working on the options, and those will be brought forth to the public to show them. And I just hope that they are ambitious with this, because I think it's a pieces of property that can afford an ambitious and exciting solution. So, and when I say ambitious, I really mean from a density standpoint.
Yeah, before I turn over to your colleague there, a density standpoint of what kind of planning?
I'd like to see, let's say, a series of, higher storied buildings than maybe the ones, the twos and the threes, which are often done around here. Now, there are some great examples in the city that show that we can do, higher rise type buildings. It's all about how it fronts the street, how it edges the street, and how you deal with the parking as far as hiding it. Because you want to do this in a very pedestrian way. And which is what is really being, designed right now. The city is very much on board with making this a real signature, street, a street that'll be a magnet for people to want to come to.
Very walkable. And in fact, extremely. I go back to, I think it was, what, last January when, was it Jeff Speck?
Right.
I'm trying to remember who you had talking about walkable cities.
He was our January speaker. I think that one of the other things that's really key here is that this is an opportunity to re-knit the city, because it was really torn asunder during urban renewal. And I think one of the things that was struggled with initially on this on the redesign was that there was a sort of a ghost of the old inner loop that kept appearing on the new plan. Mm-hmm. And that stemmed from the fact that the plan actually, I think, and you, your question was very well put, needed to be probably more in context with things on either side. It's something that we always urge. It makes a lot of sense. That you look at where the project is occurring in relationship to what's around it. And that seems so logical, but we're often in such a hurry on things, too. Once the funding comes through and things, there are deadlines, and then, as Roger points out, there are these confines that are put into place by New York State DOT and others, other agencies and people that feed into this process that sort of control and provide parameters that might not produce as, you know, high risk or creative or adventuresome a project as we might like to see. But I think this is such a good beginning. We've been very pleased by, you know, the move forward on this because as a design center, we've been involved with this every day for the past 10 years of our existence in terms of something that we've, you know, been trying to push forward.
So. And I think as we begin to look at some of the finalists for the 2014 awards, the news peg of the Interloop today reminds us that things take time. I mean, you talk about going back to 1990. And it's easy to be impatient, whether we're talking about a project in Penn Yan or Geneva, New York, or Batavia, or Pittsford, or Rochester. It's easy to be impatient. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, do we need to be more impatient with this, Johnny? I mean, we're talking 24 years before this thing is finally started in Rochester with the Interloop.
Well, I think it provides an impetus for maybe, you know, other things latching on. I think that we always see that projects serve as catalysts and then things move forward. Mm-hmm. If you look at the redevelopment of the downtown, and one of our awards is given in Bob Macon's honor. Bob Macon was a very innovative and honored architect here who practiced in Rochester for many years and was one of the key forces that helped to reactivate residential life in the downtown. He took the chance to develop apartments or townhouses rather on Selden Street in the Grove Place area, and it has since burgeoned. That neighborhood has burgeoned, and sometimes it takes longer for all of the forces to come together that have to make, you know, the pieces and parts happen. But we've certainly seen a huge increase in downtown population as a result of those initial, you know, projects that seeded this kind of activity later. And that's one of the reasons that we have an award for urban innovation in his honor. We also honor Betty Strassenberg for her activism. We try to recognize the fact that oftentimes people and groups work behind the scenes for long, long periods of time, to make things be realized into actual projects, bricks and mortar, and other kinds of endeavors. So, the third award that we give is the Director's Award. And that is an award that the Board of Directors of the Community Design Center selects. The other two awards are nominated by the public. And we had an unprecedented 16 nominations for those awards this year. The Director's Award is given for efforts that really enhance and promote the vibrancy of the public realm. This is a term that we always credit Roger with keeping right on the front burner in front of everybody because he's been such a champion for, you know, the improvement of the public realm, which this Interloop project will serve to do. And it's really about high-quality level community design and planning and policy and a visible success of an endeavor and communication of a vision. So today we'd like to announce on the air the honorable mention and the winner of those Director's Awards.
Yeah, please do.
The honorable mention is going to the Genesee Land Trust for their development of the El Camino Trail in Rochester. This is a significant 2-mile trail that that travels through from Ridge Road down into the depths of the Northeast Quadrant, into the Clifford Conkey neighborhood. It occupies a 2.25 mile length, and it really serves to connect inner city residents and neighbors and neighborhoods with natural places. So it connects to the Genesee River Trail, and it also connects to Seneca Park. We celebrate the Genesee Land Trust for their work in the region, and in particular this El Camino Trail. Our winner this year is the Village Gate and Gary Stern and his perseverance in really the creative reuse of a former industrial complex and the buildings that he has really steadily, step by step, renovated both on that site directly and adjacent. He's taken risks. He's experimented. It's, a 3-decade-plus journey that he's taken and the people that work with him. And he's really had to partner and collaborate, and those are things that we encourage. So we really applaud both of these projects and are very excited about the recipients.
Yeah. Actually, I drove through coming here, to pick up Johnny at the Design Center down Goodman Street by that complex. And then every time I do go by there, I look around and see the catalytic effect that potentially this building has had a lot to do with, along with, some of the other institutions that are in the area, but everybody together has combined to really activate and energize that whole area, whether it's, again, remodeling and redoing existing structures, or it being the terminus for the second phase of Art Walk, and the art gallery doing its work. So there's a lot of things that are going on. And Gary, in a way, sort of was the pioneer of making all of this happen.
I've said to my wife before, I want an office in Village Gate. I have no reason to have one. I just love the building. So I mean, it's just an absolutely, it feels... this is not the right word, but futuristic and very modern and very forward-thinking with great use of space.
It's very funky.
Roger with a better word. It is.
It has a lot of color, a lot of vibrancy, a lot of spunk, and, it's not a staid old, kind of thing. And so he's really made it very lively. And
He's kept...
The people that are in there, there are lots of great people that, think that way. And it's really a neat location.
Is the Ad Council still in there? I'm trying to remember.
I
asked because went to a meeting there one time, and I said, this is the office I want. What a great building it is. So very clever. So again... Village Gate going to be honored. If you heard Village Gate and for a moment you thought City Gate, very different.
Mm-hmm.
Before I move on to some of the others, I'm curious to know what Roger and Johnny think about the plans at City Gate.
Interesting.
Don't put us on the spot.
I was at a panel recently. It was a regional planners 3-day meeting in Rochester. And there were people from Buffalo and Rochester and Syracuse and points west and east. And there was talk on the panel about whether big box is good development and City Gate, et cetera, because kind of the narrative has been bipartisan win, bringing in a big box with Costco, I think. So I'm curious. You're on the spot now, and I apologize for that, but go ahead.
I'll say this. We followed that, I have anyway, to right in the beginning when that project was first materialized in concept stages. And some of the early schematic designs for that project, we think, were much better than what the ultimate project is going to be. Primarily because it was really a very credible attempt at creating a real solid, walkable, mixed-use neighborhood. It had mostly smaller structures. It did not have the big Costco big box there. And it was laid out in a way that potentially, if developed further, could have been a real plus for this community in that area. Now, there are pieces of it that have been maintained like that. It's not anywhere as large in land area, I guess, as we'd like to see it happen. And we keep it. We keep, you know, suggesting that whatever the in amongst the parking lots and things that are going to be there, that they make it, that they connect it and make it at least as pedestrian friendly as possible. We don't have before us the big final plan that's developing, but that's my take so far.
All right, so it sounds like a dose of skepticism. And can you remind our listeners where it is, Roger, where the City Gate project is?
Well, it's Westfall, right?
And East Henrietta.
East Henrietta and Westfall, yeah. Right.
Yeah. Right across from Monroe Community Hospital.
But in general, is the notion of big box as an anchor to cure a lot of problems?
Well,
is that a fallacy?
Big boxes can be handled in a way that incorporates them seamlessly into a walkable community. I don't think that is happening here. Unfortunately, but you know there are great demonstration projects. Well, I mean, real live big box, including Walmarts and the like, that have been interjected into and built beautifully with in harmony with the walkable smaller uses around. So, but this didn't happen in this case.
Okay. That's an interesting project, and we're certainly going to be following that one as we go throughout 2015. Just if you're just joining us, we're talking to Johnny Monroe and Roger Brown from the Community Design Center Rochester. Their 2014 Reshaping Rochester Awards are coming up on December 2nd. If you want to call the program and join the conversation, it's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. You want to go on December 2nd? Can people still get tickets, Johnny?
Yes, tickets are, and we do have limited seating, so, and we're filling up. So if people are interested in coming, they can contact us online. They can call the Community Design Center at 271-0520 or go on our website at rrcdc.org. We are hosting this from 11:45 to 1:30 on Tuesday, December 2nd at Temple Berth Kodesh. And it's a wonderful venue, but as I said, there are a limited number of seats. So this is not a 500 capacity event.
Sure.
So, but we're very excited about the opportunity to present these awards and to honor everybody. So the Betty Strassenberg and Bob Macon Awards will be announced at that event. And as I said, we have 16 nominations, and among them we have for the Betty Strassenberg Award for Activism, we have Mike Governelli, who has been involved, very well known in the community for his involvement in the Rochester subway, who has been an activist promoting good transportation and transit, and actually I would say really thoughtful development in our community that supports that. We also, Pete Monticelli, who is a local, longtime contractor, developer type on a neighborhood level, an activist who has played a tremendous role in the redevelopment of the South Wedge. He's worked also in the Susan B. Anthony neighborhood, and he's also, as an individual, somebody that has worked to further community just by the way that he conducts his business and lives his life. A wonderful example of all of that. The Grove Place Neighborhood Association is another nomination for this award, and we were just talking about them earlier in the program in terms of the Grove Place being a one of the first neighborhoods that was redeveloped in the in our downtown, and has led the way in that regard. Cornhill is another. John Oster, who is a local developer, has also been nominated for his role in activating development in the Susan B. Anthony and High Falls area.
As you know, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead.
John is Edgemere Development, and he's partnered with Edgewater to be involved in the Charlotte, you know, housing. But John, I've worked with John on several projects, and he is really a, you know, you don't talk about the creativity of putting together financial packages to make projects work. It's one of those things that never, hardly ever gets mentioned. John, though, is a wizard at mm-hmm. cobbling, putting together, bringing or lending institutions and grant monies and so forth together to make some of these very difficult projects happen. Like he was very responsible for the mills, the mixed-use project, downtown, and which was a very difficult, again, project to put together of that quality. So the key is John really works very hard to have a really high-quality project developed. Anyway.
One of the criteria for this award is passion and advocacy and, dedication to making things happen. And as Roger says, all of these people that we're mentioning in these groups have really gone the long mile in terms of sticking in there and being dedicated over a period of time to accomplishing.
And let me just jump in and say before mm-hmm. we keep going down the list, number one, if you're waiting on the phone, Paul, others, we're coming to you in just a moment, and we're going to broaden the conversation on our phone lines. Also, the next guest or the next person on your list is someone who's going to be on this program, I hope, on Thursday, and she's been on before, Sue Gardner-Smith.
Yes.
Because on Thursday, Sue was in before when we did a roundtable on farmers markets. Mm-hmm. And one of our listeners back in the summer said, essentially wrote me an email that said, great show, but can you eventually do a discussion on how to continue to eat local year-round? And Sue Gardner-Smith is somebody who helps put together a Brighton farmers market, and I didn't even know that certain things did go year-round. I know there's hydroponic growing and indoor, mm-hmm. so that's going to be Thursday, and I hope Sue will join us. But why is Sue on your list particularly?
I think for her pioneering work in not only the Brighton Farmers Market, but in terms of her serving as a resource for farmers markets all around our city. And this is, as you say, a burgeoning kind of movement that is adapting itself in various neighborhoods. And there is the need to have, as we see in our public market, our own public market over in Markerview Heights, the need to have longer hours, more day-to-day kinds of availability of local food and fresh food for people who are living in city neighborhoods and in surrounding neighborhoods. So we celebrate Sue's work and her efforts to bring these farmers markets to everybody.
And the next one is the North Winton Village Neighborhood Association.
Yes, and who have been ardent activists and in promoting their neighborhood. They've provided visible turnaround of neighborhood streets and businesses. They've served as a resource for people in their area who seek to make improvements, and we're always impressed by their tenacity, and and some would call it forcefulness in some cases to make their point and to bring change across. John Nugent and Mark Iacona are also nominated.
They need practically no introduction.
Yes.
As the heads of the Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival.
And we really celebrate, I mean, they've been celebrated in terms of the in terms of the nomination for them. The write-up really targeted the kinds of visible transformation of our downtown every year. And it's not only a transformation physically, it's a mindset. Because Rochester, the people in Rochester can sometimes not be, as we talked about, as adventuresome as we'd like to think that they should be. And here's an example of a festival that has grown and developed and evolved and still maintained a tremendous emphasis on quality and on really engaging the community as a whole. And every year, there's such an effort made to bring people to the center of the city and to provide all kinds of both free and varied related activities that expose people to the importance of music and the value of music and community.
And finally, Project Scion.
Right. This is an interesting effort by three individuals, Sharon Coates, Pietro Forgiuelli, and Bruce Zaretsky, who have actually targeted vacant lots in various sections of the city. One of the most visible is over in the J Street area, and engage the community very, very strongly in repurposing those vacant lots in ways that really have a vision that the community holds to be important, translated into a physical change and transformation. And their projects are quite extraordinary.
Let's just keep in mind, too, that these are not nominations that we, the Design Center, has made.
No.
Again, it's very important to recognize that these are coming from the community at large. And, you know, these are people and projects mm-hmm. that others in the community that live there believe to be, ripe to be awarded.
That's eight finalists for the Betty Strassenberg Award for Activism. Here's what we're going to do now. On Twitter, we're getting a lot of interesting comments. You've given us sort of little seeds to take the discussion in a lot of different directions. Questions about the South Wedge, about Shalott, about the mission of the Community Design Center Rochester, more about CityGate, and some phone calls as well. So let's take a 60-second break. We'll get to the phones, and then we'll look at some of the other finalists in the other categories. So short break and more next on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, we look at writing, the value of writing, and how to get published, especially in a world where it is harder than ever to publish. What about self-publishing? And what is the value of the writer to themselves as artists? And I mean by that, sometimes writers want to write just to get something out, not just to be read for the audience. Well, we look at all of that right in the middle of National Novel Writing Month, next hour.
Which book adventures do you want to go on?
For some teachers, motivating students is like being on stage.
And you look at these faculty members and you watch them, oh boy, their performance. I mean, you have to be. And our failure to recognize that is a problem.
Teaching as Performance, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 o'clock on your public radio station.
And welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let's get to the phones. This is Paul in Rochester. Paul, thanks for waiting. You're on with Roger and Johnny from the Community Design Center Rochester.
I don't mind waiting on a good show. good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
There are two buildings downtown. One of them, the first one I'm going to name, I believe is owned by the city. It's 88 Elm Street. The other one is 67 Chestnut Street, which is not only actually a few feet away from each other.
Mm-hmm.
Both these buildings looks as though they have been totally ignored and walked away from for quite a few years. Do you have any concept or idea who these buildings belong to and what's going on with them? When you're discussing the inner loop is a great idea, but how about doing some stuff to the stuff that's already there? As I said, these two buildings, 88 Elm Street and 67 Chestnut Street.
I think that actually I may be incorrect on this, but I think the one of the buildings on Elm Street that you're talking about has just been recently sold. And I don't know who it was sold to, but I do remember hearing something along those lines. But I do agree that should there be an effort to renovate, in both cases, these buildings and reuse them in a better fashion than there, maybe a higher, better use, better utilization of them. That would contribute in a very positive way to this area of Chestnut Street and Broad Street, where we've long sort of looked at that as an area that could use some improvement from a design perspective and also more vibrancy at the street level. It's a street that connects, during the Jazz Festival and other activities in the downtown that could be better from a public realm point of view. Roger, I don't know if you...
Well, I was going to say that. I mean, so goes the Midtown Plaza development, so goes these buildings.
Yes.
Well, 67 Chestnut Street was originally an old hotel.
Yes.
That's right.
The Richwood Hotel.
Right.
And at one point it was the motor vehicle department.
Mm-hmm.
But now that building literally has not been... for a while there was some construction work going on about 5 years ago, and everything suddenly stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And you're behind there, those streets are really pretty. And then you get to these, what I call them, two bad teeth, and they seem to be going nowhere.
Well, one of the issues with the other building is that the floor-to-floor heights are very shallow, and a lot of people have looked at that. Many people have, thought they could be able to do something with. We'll see over time what happens, and that's sometimes what happens. It takes sometimes for an old building that's been abandoned to revive again, and so much depends on what's going on around it.
Thanks for the call, Paul. Let's grab Greg and Henrietta. Greg, you're on Connections. Thanks for calling.
Hello, Evan and the esteemed panel. How are all of you this afternoon?
Great. How are you?
Just fine.
Good. I am so excited about the inner loop, finally, a portion of it being filled in. Although I did want to point out a couple things, if you're willing to listen. Safety comes first in this area. Jobs come second, and then the development will follow, in my opinion. There's 50,000 people that commute into the center city of Rochester every day, and I'm a little bit concerned about this because it doesn't seem like anyone wants to refocus on some kind of large manufacturing facility in these areas if the property is available where people can get, you know, the $45,000 a year jobs. Kodak is gone. Although I like this very much, it connects neighborhoods, it allows for bicycles, it allows for foot traffic, but the area that it's connecting, bringing back these two neighborhoods, you know, do the folks have money to spend on whatever it is that they're going to develop? And those are my comments. I wonder if you all might be kind enough to give me your point of view, and we'll see what happens.
All right, Greg, thanks for the call. Johnny?
I think that you're absolutely right that we do need places for people to be employed, and some kind of a business-based light industry facility is something that we've, you know, traditionally did supply jobs in the city. We're looking at new business models now. In fact, some of those businesses are inhabiting old buildings all over the downtown and then along the edges, like on St. Paul Street. They tend to be smaller. They tend to be more focused, higher tech. And I think that as these buildings start to be reused and then land adjacent becomes available through maybe capturing other parts of the inner loop over time, you're going to start to see a combination of rebuilding that will not be just residential. And I don't think that either Roger or I are suggesting that all of the redevelopment in this inner loop area would be strictly residential. At the major corridors where these buildings touch down, like East Avenue, one would expect to have some kind of a retail or office use along those corridors. So I think that you're right in alluding to the fact that we have to we have to be aware that we have to think about economy and all of the workings of a community as we reconnect this area.
What do you think, Roger?
I think the street that's going to be created, Union Street, is probably going to be a lot safer, frankly, than the inner loop that it's going to replace, and which is really good. It's going to be a slower trafficked. The amount of cars on that inner loop is very negligible compared to, you know, other city streets. I think you'll find the focus is more of a low speed pedestrian-based kind of street. The city is going to evaluate the developers that ultimately vie to develop along the various parcels, and the parcels are going to be divided into smaller areas. I don't think you're going to find one big, huge parcel. At the end of the day, I think that it's going to be divided down into smaller parcels, which opens up the market for, a lot of different developers that are very much qualified to build there. So, including Strong Museum mm-hmm. is one of the, mm-hmm. Potential, developers there. So I would look at this project extremely favorably for the city over time. Mm-hmm.
Annie wants to know, are your guests aware of some of the strong opposition to Charlotte development? I heard them mention Charlotte.
Yes, we are.
Very aware, yes.
Very much so. And some of us have tried to, has been to some of the public meetings that have been held and have offered suggestions and ideas as to maybe how to mitigate some of the concerns that that are being expressed there. So we're very much aware of that.
Will asks a question that could probably be its own hour. Are there lessons from the South Wedge? What works and what doesn't? And heard that you had mentioned the South Wedge as kind of a success.
One of the beauties of the South Wedge is that there was a huge public participation process. The South Wedge Committee being the leadership in that endeavor, working very closely with the city and working very closely with the neighbors, and creating a plan for development that has been, to my knowledge, followed very, very much so. So actually the success has been the committee sort of coalescing the total neighborhood and, just being aware and so forth of the things that are going on in that neighborhood.
And there, too, the business community has been provided very strong leadership in recent years. And the two working together, of course, the business is coming online later than some of the initial other kinds of development. But it's this kind of urban innovation that we're looking at. We did award last year the South Wedge Planning Committee for their 35 years of work in that area, and steadily, one step after another, moving forward, and that was one of the director's awards last year. So, we're very very cognizant of their both their successes and the things that they've had to deal with.
But very interesting to hear Roger talk about the fact that there was a community plan that has largely been adhered to.
And, absolutely.
And when we talk about planning, it's nice to see. It's exciting to see places like the South Wedge. I mean, nothing's perfect, mm-hmm. but right. It's pretty exciting to see. A couple more comments, and then we got to get the list of the other finalists in, but let me get back to the phones, and this is Joseph in Rochester. Go ahead, Joseph.
Yes, hi, how are you? I live in the Preservation District, and I have a question for the Preservation Board and for the City of Rochester, and that is, why are they not keeping the brownstone curbing and the blue slate sidewalks, which I think are really quite a gem to this neighborhood?
We are not necessarily strongly linked with how those decisions are made. I would add that we certainly care about and are very much concentrate on the importance of preservation in what we do.
How would you describe the mission then of Community Design Center Rochester?
The Community Design Center really serves as a resource for municipalities and neighborhoods that want to improve, that want to thoughtfully plan for their future. And we provide the technical assistance and guidance and serve as a sounding board and also produce physical products that they can use in that regard, like vision plans. Plans are absolutely essential to moving forward in a not only in a prescribed way, in an intentional way that can be changed. Plans are flexible, but they have to be used. They have to be, and they have to be inclusive and bought into by the places that they're made for. Otherwise, if there's nothing in terms of community spirit behind them, like there was in the Wedge, then they're not going to be implemented. Government and bureaucracy and private development, all of that have to work together with citizens in order for those positive outcomes we want to see.
You know, this is a situation, too, where if you have a real strong opinion on the saving of slate sidewalks and Medina stone curbs, I'm assuming that you're in the Cornhill area. I could be all wrong on that, but there are other areas, too, that have these. I would, for sure, get involved with, I mean, you could talk to us, or you could talk to the Landmark Society, or you yourself can be a real catalyst in bringing this subject up if you, and I think it's a great idea. There are certainly communities all over the country that are, you know, saving their slate sidewalks and their Medina stone curbing. So I would jump in and lead the charge.
Yes.
And Chris on Twitter, building off some of the CityGate comments, and again, if you missed it, Roger was talking about the fact that big box doesn't automatically mean anti-pedestrian or anti sort of development that can be stitched together in a way that doesn't look like a big sore thumb. But Chris writes, CityGate sounds like a scandal. Ugly Henrietta-style sprawl moving closer to city neighborhoods, and now CityGate's opening is delayed and will likely go over budget, which will be paid for by cutting more county services. Is his comment regarding Henrietta-style sprawl fair, Roger?
Well, it's certainly more heading in that direction than if it were done like, done in a more in a walkable, new urbanist kind of way, I guess. There are better ways. And frankly, potentially, if the site is developed in this better way, because people want to live in these more walkable neighborhoods, the market in the future for them is much more positive than if they stay with the status quo of the 50s, 60s type development.
Our guests for the hour are Roger Brown and Johnny Monroe from the Community Design Center Rochester. They have their 2014 Reshaping Rochester Awards coming up in 15 days. It's December 2nd. Tickets are available. And let's look at the finalists. And Johnny, help me run down the list for the 2014 Robert Macon Award for Urban Innovation finalists, starting with SWBR Architects.
Yes, and SWBR Architects were nominated for the Sun House. That's S-O-N House. Sun House was a very well-known musician. This is on Joseph Avenue. And it is a wonderful development that Providence Housing has done. And it's really a unique effort to house the homeless. And to provide a safe place for them within this community. And it's been designed in a way that really is contextual with the community, which we're really happy to see. In another regional award nomination, we're looking at Burkett Landing, which is an adaptive reuse of an old 1857 warehouse associated with the Burkett Mills, which is one of the oldest mills in the country. It's located on the Cuca outlet.
If you've ever driven through Penyan, you see the massive griddle.
Mm-hmm.
That's yeah, the area we're talking
about. The buckwheat
about.
Pancake.
Largest buckwheat pancake.
Well, that's the area. The building is
down near the outlet.
It's down near the outlet.
Near the outlet.
And it's been beautifully it's been restored and adaptively reused. And it's using the historic tax credits. So it has been done with every effort made to reinstitute the original materials and the kinds of things that we do in these projects when they are historic. Passborough Associates has been nominated for the Bridge Square building, and this is another adaptive reuse right in the city in the Cascade District. This is a building that has received also LEED status for the sustainable quality of the very creative redesign of that building. We were in there recently as part of a tour that we led for the Congress for the New Urbanism Conference, and very impressive. And upstairs in the building, Passero occupies a couple of floors in the lower level, and upstairs is housing apartments. And there's also accommodation for parking made in this building that was done below the building, which was very nicely executed. The Main Street Art Gallery in Clifton Springs was nominated as well for, they've become sort of a community gathering place for people in that general area out near Clifton Springs, featuring wonderful cultural opportunities, including great shows, gallery shows for people there. And they've really instituted a sort of a community center type of an aspect into that community, which is great and been very innovative. The Golisano Institute for Sustainability at RIT, for those of you that haven't seen this building and haven't experienced it, I suggest that you you take a trip out to RIT, and you're certainly welcome to walk through it. It is quite innovative in terms of the green perspective, and has received a lot of accolades for its design. The City Grill and Ballroom at 384 East Avenue Inn and Suites is another building that used to be in, and Roger has some connection with the original Treadway Inn that was designed there and served as an inn for years for the city. And it's been very adapted in a very interesting way to new uses.
Well, a developer, too, has done some phenomenal things in other places around the city, too. So, you know, the Sacred Heart Academy or in Prince Street, John Ballone, and, you know, other areas. So he's...
Medical Arts Building, yeah. All of that. He's done a lot for our city. Fran Cosentino and Jane Parker were nominated for the rehabilitation of Frank Lloyd Wright's Boynton House on East Boulevard, which was an incredibly complicated and complex rehabilitation, and Edgemere Development for their work in Susan B. Anthony and the High Falls districts in terms of really providing very creative, innovative redevelopment and as well as restoration and reuse of buildings.
Darren on Twitter wants to know, what does Johnny think about the new Genesee Brew House now that it's complete? Is there a story here?
Yeah,
that is on the site of the, you know, the Genesee Brewery, yeah. And the former brewery that was demolished, that we always felt could have been reused very beautifully, and still have some regret that that couldn't have been worked out.
However, we never did really. We always thought this was a terrific idea and a terrific project.
Absolutely.
And we applauded the idea of taking that building and making it into a brewery, a brew pub, and a museum, too, to the point that actually when the CNU conference was held in Buffalo and we led a tour of that group here in Rochester, we had lunch at the brew pub because it was, you know, positioned beautifully, and everybody enjoyed it. And it's true, we do still believe that the building, Cataract Building as it's known, could have survived and lent a great, let's say, peace to the public realm in that particular section.
Okay. We got less than 90 seconds. One more phone call. This is Carlene. Go ahead, Carlene.
Yes. I have questions. First of all, compliments to the design team who've been instrumental in so many valuable projects in Rochester.
Thank you.
The plans that I've seen just recently for this Shalott development made me question whether anyone had really looked at them carefully. The unfortunate thing is I'm not against development or having high-rise buildings, but when you look at the plans, they have two high-rise buildings smack up against each other, sort of like two cereal boxes, thus blocking out the east view and the west view from each building. So one wonders who is planning this and whether you will be able to have a say. There have been no core drillings, and they're talking about putting two floors of parking.
All right, Carlene, let me jump in only because we're at 30 seconds and we're out of time. I promise we're going to hit this topic entirely on a separate hour very soon. But real briefly, what do you think about what she's saying?
Well, I think this. Keep in mind that parcels 2 and 3 are very pure, highly early schematic renditions of what could happen. The only thing that has any, let's say, real definitiveness is parcel 1. So there are plenty of opportunities mm-hmm. down the line to get involved with what goes on parcels 2 and 3. And definitely keep that. Everybody thinks that it's a done deal, that that's what's going to go on the other two parcels. Not the case.
Okay. Well, and again, I know there's a lot of interest in that
yes.
development. We're going to cover that on this program for an entire hour very soon. So Carlene, stay tuned for that. And thanks to our guests, Roger and Johnny. Great stuff again. And if you want tickets and want to join the 2014 Reshaping Rochester Awards, where can you go, Johnny?
Please go to our website, rrcdc.org, or you can call at 271-0520. And we hope you'll all come out and celebrate all these great awards.
All right. Thanks for taking the time to be in here. Short break now. And we will be back in just a moment right here on this Monday afternoon on Connections. Thanks for being here.